One, two, one, two. Hello, everybody. Do you like the way I said everybody, as though there are loads of people listening? Hello, this is episode 2 of the Failing Writers podcast, where 3 failing, albeit keen writers talk about writing instead of, you know, writing. This week, we tackle important subjects like teenage poetry, what we did before we started writing, and what we're writing now. Oh, and dinosaurs, and what jobs they'd be good at.
Hi, I'm Tom. I'm a failing writer. I keep trying to write, and then, ooh, the bins need putting out, and, ooh, I should probably mow the lawn, shouldn't I? Yeah, maybe just chill out and watch TV. Oh, I forgot to write again. That's me.
Hi, I'm Dave, and I've been failing to write now for longer than Jesus was alive.
Hello, I'm John. I'm a failing writer. I tend to write things that are too wordy and not very much fun to read.
So that's us, the 3 Musket Writers. Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast.
So, should we start?
Here we are. The podcast is starting again! Oh my God!
Maybe need to work on the intros a little bit there, don't we?
Maybe we should,
Kind of gets the listener straight into it, doesn't it?
It does. Should we shout the first bit?
Just all, like, first 10 minutes.
First bit in caps. Yeah.
Give it some beans.
You get some good shows, though, where it goes on for, it's, been on for half an hour, and then they do the opening credits. And you think, bloody hell, it's only just started. It's nearly finished.
You know that's like a really good TV drama, don't you?
Yeah.
Where they're like reeling you in and then names just start appearing at the bottom of the screen. And you're like, what?
And then it goes to an advert.
Yeah.
That's what's missing from this. Adverts. We need some adverts.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I know a few people who've got small businesses that would benefit from an advert that no one ever heard.
Maybe we just need to target really bad businesses that aren't very good at what they do.
Yeah.
And actually advertising for them to people that are actually listening
wouldn't
be good, because the punters would just be disappointed with the end product.
They'd know how bad they were, yeah, but there'd be a synergy in that, wouldn't there?
Whereas advertising somewhere where no one is going to hear it or do anything about it won't have any negative effect on their business.
Yeah.
Which is an overall net positive compared with advertising.
If we found some businesses that just had maybe one department or one product that they did that they didn't really like, but, you know, they could just try and push that one.
Do you like cakes?
Yes, I do.
But are you fed up of cakes that taste too nice?
This cake is too delicious. I wish there was a thoroughly average cake that tasted neither good nor bad.
There is! Come and try Mrs. Kipling's Thoroughly Basic Non-Fancy Cake Buns. They're edible?
The Failing Writers Podcast, brought to you in association with Mrs. Kipling Cakes.
They're not bad. They're not great.
They're just...
So, last time, we said we were all going to bring some of our terrible teenage poetry. Tom,
I've got it
in
here, Dave.
Particular.
I've got it.
Yeah,
I've
seen
I've got it here.
The
I've
cover
got it.
Of the book. So, Tom, what is the poem and where is
it
from?
Hang on, sorry. Oh, can I just throw something in before you carry on?
Yeah.
Just a thought, but should we do this at the end? This might be the only reason people are listening. If we want them to listen to some of the podcast, we might want to leave this to the end.
I can't wait that long.
Okay, I can't wait either, to be honest.
No, let's just do it.
You can always move it to the end of the podcast, can't you, Tommy?
Yeah.
No.
You can always cut it off halfway through the poem and then...
No, this stuff's going to be in. The podcast is literally going to start and end with my poem. That's it. The rest is irrelevant.
It's obviously quite good, isn't it?
Not really. I've lost the page. I haven't read it for 20 years. So anyway, this was in the Our World Caring Poetry Festival 1995, created and sponsored by the Co-op.
You are a caring man, Tom, so that makes sense.
Mm, yeah, and I do like shopping at the Co-op as well. So it tied in very well. I mean, you'll notice it was around the late night, about 1995, where you two will have noticed this, and you probably hadn't been able to put your finger on quite why. But around that time, you probably felt that the world became a lot more caring.
Yeah, I did feel that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that was due to the Caring Poetry Festival.
Yeah.
It started something.
Honestly, if it wasn't for the Co-op Caring Poetry Festival Anthology 1995, right now we'd be staring down the barrel of climate disaster,
yeah,
environmental problems and all sorts, really.
Yeah.
People not getting on with each other,
yeah,
racial problems, the whole lot. But
yeah,
I very much doubt Greenpeace would have existed as well.
So my poem was entitled Just Around the Corner. So it's really saying, think about the future, guys.
Oh, where is the future? It's around the corner.
Something I didn't realise till I found this book in the garage is just how short the poem is. I thought it was a bit more of a... But yeah, about eight.
You think it was an epic?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, here are the first eight verses. So do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Very much so, Tommy.
The only reason I'm here.
Right, right. Mabry... Oh, no, I messed up.
Mabry.
This is Tom, professional voiceover artist.
It's very dark in here and the writing's very small.
You sound quite nervous suddenly, Tommy.
And the pages have almost turned like sepia, Christy. This is 26 years old now.
Yeah.
Quarter of a century.
That's older than some people.
Yeah, it is, Dan.
And yet, timeless, Tommy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, probably let me read it first.
Well, but that first word, yeah, that's a timeless start, isn't it? Maybe.
Anyway, the poem is still entitled Just Around the Corner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they factoried in fields, planted more than they ever yield. Maybe they cancered the lungs of timber, but the coffin therein forgets to remember. Maybe mankind is the next dinosaur race, and some supreme being will put us in place. Maybe to err was dinosaur, and they thought this earth was their own, but like us, failed to realise that we're merely tenants in a temporary home.
Wow.
Ooh.
Wow.
There's a lot going on
that
there.
That is. Wow.
So, I mean, there's no archaeological evidence to suggest that the dinosaurs did indeed build factories in fields or do any kind
of nothing to say they didn't, though, isn't it? So
I suppose the T-Rex's short arms, that would be a problem, building things, I would imagine.
Yeah, would make using a hoe difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe the T-Rex was like the foreman. Maybe they were just like... pointing.
But over there. Where?
Over there. I can't see where you're pointing.
I'm pointing.
Stop taking the piss out of my arms. I'll eat you. Oh, bloody hell, he will as well. The Diplodocuses, they'd be good, wouldn't they, for the high stuff?
You wouldn't need a crane.
Like living cranes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just realised, actually, I think that's the opening credits to the Flintstones.
Oh, yeah.
It's been done that way. Everything's been done, hasn't it?
We're not successful. We're just regurgitating old cartoons.
So I know I wrote that myself. I think that's a relatively accessible 17-year-old poem. And then I realised I'd not really, obviously, had no interest in the other people that had entered the competition and been published. I was having a little flick through before. This is for me, the best one. This is from Leanne Denton, age 12, from Cambridge. There's a fair chance Leanne Denton, aged 38, will be listening to this right now. Which would be weird, wouldn't it?
I mean, this is a national competition, wasn't it? So
I'm not sure what this one's trying to say. And I hope Leanne Denton has had counselling since. Our world. I picked a flower for you to smell. I shook some leaves for you to hear. I grew some grass for you to touch. But you did not smell my flower, but you did not hear the leaves, and you did not touch my grass.
End of poem.
If ever there's a poem that was
a cry for help.
Yeah. I feel like I shouldn't have read that out loud now, but it was in the Our World Co-op Caring Poetry Festival Anthology 1995. So,
yes, and that counts as success, isn't it? That's more success than
something, isn't it?
Anyone else has
something.
Got.
So, it's more than me, to be honest, Tom. So
what do you think about the dinosaurs?
But to err is dinosaur. What a line.
Oh,
that
that's
is
a great line.
Hey?
I mean, I don't think they did go err. I think they went more
err.
But
we probably did.
We'll
to be
forgive.
Honest.
We'll forgive.
Yeah, artistic
still
license.
A great line.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, I guess, in many ways, the pinnacle of my writing.
It was all downhill from there.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. John.
Hello.
What's your teenage poetry find?
Moving past yours very quickly there, Dave.
Yeah. Well, I can't, you know.
Saving the best to last.
Well, could say that, but.
I've got two. I can't decide which one to read out. I've got one that's really
which one's the shortest?
Quite bad, but it's sort of quite funny. And the other one is actually quite good, I think.
Oh,
well, I think we're going to have to hear both of them now, aren't we?
No, you don't need to hear both. Okay. I'm going to start with the bad one.
We will be the judge of that.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
No, they're both amazing. This one was probably primarily used to try and woo somebody or impress them and probably failed. But let's listen. See what you think. See if this seduces you.
See if it woos us.
This is called Vows.
What age were you at this point, John?
That is a very good question. I suspect I was 15, maybe younger, in fact, maybe 14.
Hormoned up.
Oh, my God, yeah. With this finger.
Whoa! What?
I gotta start again. Vows. With the... It's not a great opener. Is it?
I don't know. It depends on the girl.
Let's try again.
With this finger, I thee wed.
With this finger, I thee bless and trace an arrow on your chest, tipped with my fears, my secret dread, to poison you softly in my bed. And with these tears, I consecrate the beauty that I contemplate from nightfall through to morning late, when secret thoughts keep me awake. And with my body I thee love, if love is strong enough an oath to capture you and all your charms and bind you in these grateful arms.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, I was really feeling it, wasn't I?
I think we had very different childhoods.
Yeah. I very much had echoes of... A young man sat in his bedroom by himself trying really, really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, really does.
Really squeezing every
bit of sincerity out of himself.
Yeah. It's not serious enough. Make it more serious. Use some words to make it more heartfelt and dark and serious.
Yes, yes. Let's be impressive.
It is
no,
dark.
Don't write
it's
finger. Don't write finger. Oh, I've written finger.
I thought it was
finger,
pretty good, to be honest, that you managed to get fingering and breasts, basically, into the first two lines.
It is incredibly sexual, isn't it?
It is quite horny. Tom's writing about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
John's writing about...
I can only think about one thing.
Yeah.
I think that that is mainly what inhabited my thoughts in that sort of period.
It rhymed well, though, didn't it?
Didn't it?
It had a good rhythm, yeah.
Thanks, man.
It was lovely.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to get the vows, you know. I was trying to make it sound like it was some sort of religious thing. I mean, it sort of works.
I was. Yeah.
It probably did. It probably did get me a little kiss or something.
Did it?
Oh. I honestly can't. I can't even remember who I wrote it for, which is terrible, isn't it? So I was much more in love with the idea
yourself.
Of being in love, obviously. Myself. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what's the bad one then?
Oh, was that the good one?
No, that was the bad one. Sorry.
Ah. Well, no, he's changed it now. That was the bad one.
That's the bad one.
He's furiously writing another one now. Why don't you do yours? Don't write fingering again, John. Oh, come on.
This is again a little bit about sex, but it's less about sex, this one.
God, what's wrong with you? Why are we not thinking about the industrial revolution of the third dinosaur Triassic period?
Yeah.
It's true.
Dinosaurs in coffins.
What is wrong with you?
So this one's called Night Song. I think you're going to like this one, Tommy.
Should I be taking my pants off?
On hot...
This. You might want to. Or will they just drop off?
You might want
to. Will they just remove themselves?
You'll look down.
You'll look down halfway through. They won't be there.
On hot and restless nights I lie and watch the vaulted twilight die, the violet black that floods the sky, and from my ruffled bed I gaze through the dark to coming days that whisper through the murky haze. A dustbin lid clatters, trash crashes of percussion. A cat sonata starts to open into a frenzied cadenza that sticks to the thick air, heralding a call and response from the dogs. A sudden shout trumpets out, drunken bluster and cuss, hell and perdition, mustering up the hot night's blood for fighting or for kissing. The timpani of distant thunder rolls, and then a bus grumbles home and the last bass note resolves. I think of you, your window wide, hearing the night in synchrony with me, and fall asleep with the sounds of us, of all that is to come out there, of your whisper and your breath in my ear, and only wake up to that same blue song kissing me from the radio. See, another quite sincere one there.
Quite intense. Yeah.
Very intense.
Mm-hmm. Did you shout that through some girl's window?
I don't know if it'd have the same being shouted. I don't know if it'd have this really the same depth of feeling in it. I think it might take something away from it.
It changes the intent, doesn't it? If you start shouting with this finger.
Oh, that's brilliant. It had its merits, that, John, to be fair.
It did.
I read that back and thought, Christ, that was not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It sounded like an actual poem, didn't it?
I was a little bit older, that one. I think I was doing my A-levels when I wrote that. Oh. I was probably too old to still be writing poetry.
No, some of the best bad poetry is written.
Comes out
around that period.
Age 17, 18,
What did you do with that? Do you remember or not?
I did absolutely nothing with it. I did show it to my English teacher, and she entered it for a competition.
My teacher just wrote bad things all over mine.
No, my teacher was very nice about it, which is why the only reason I kept it, because I've literally got two poems that I could find.
Wow, so you kept the best ones.
just destroyed all other evidence.
That puts it in some kind of perspective, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? It
really does.
It really does.
Anyone looking back at you will think, wow, his genius
was limited. He's always been talented, right, hasn't he?
Yeah.
If anything, he's gone downhill since then.
For 30 years, he only managed two poems, but they both rhymed really well. Quite highbrow.
Yeah, I mean, no, absolutely.
17, there's some words I didn't understand in there.
What was the one in the middle that Dave didn't understand?
I'm not sure I understood.
Cadenza? What's a cadenza?
A cadenza is it's a musical term. I think it means like a... I'm going to make a fool of myself now. I think it's like a really elaborate solo.
Oh, he's going to make a fool of himself now.
Yeah.
Not 3 minutes ago when he was reading his poem from when he was 16.
Yes, I think it's an elaborate solo.
A Vauxhall cadenza.
It does.
Very
good.
High
well
brow.
Done. Well done.
Hey, thanks, guys.
It feels a bit weird congratulating your teenage self on those now. All these. Yeah. Well done, John.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Keep plugging it's away. Nice at
get, it. It's lovely to get some feedback finally.
Yeah. No. Finally. Keep going pieces. With it.
Yeah. I think you were. Well, see, they're both there quite highbrow. Tom with his dinosaurs.
I'm expecting Dave to come with something that's like really like, Mr. Plinky had the plonky up his dinky tonk tonk. Oh, right, Dave. Yeah, when did you write that? Were you 5, 6?
No.
18?
It's not a limerick, although Pam Ayres might have been proud of it at some point.
Oh, okay.
Right.
In her career.
Nice. I like a bit of Pam.
But it is about, love, I suppose.
Of course it is.
And... teenage
God,
feelings.
You two are so two-dimensional.
Yeah.
And give us an age just before you read it.
16 or 17. I think I read this to my teacher as well because I got it into
that. Because you fancied
it? No, not that one. She looked a bit like Rambo. This was the one that was in that paid-for anthology that I didn't pay for and therefore don't have a copy of. But this was the best I could manage it, sort of 16, 17. Saturday night, it's called. Saturday night. by Dave Baird, aged 17. Saturday night, he loved it. It made his planet shake. She stared up at the ceiling, trying hard to stay awake. The excitement made him shake and scream, a blood rush to his head. Even she felt some vibrations through the fibres of the bed. Alas, they weren't from Loverboy being vibrant, supersonic. She'd pressed a button on the wall. The bed was electronic. There's something that men try to teach, but women don't know still. Even sex comes second best if United win 3-0. For women through the ages had to go without foreplay. I'm sure that even Romeo paused to watch Match of the Day.
And next on Radio 4, it's the shipping forecast.
I like
it. Enjoyed that, Dave.
Well, yeah, I mean, it rhymes as well, doesn't it? We've all managed that,
good
I think.
Good rhythm.
We all wrote stuff that rhymed, and what more can you ask?
You're listening to the Failing Writers Podcast, a podcast about failing to write.
So, chaps, have you been writing this week?
I have, actually. I've written some things this week. I've written a few chapters.
A few chapters? Yeah. What is it, a kid's book?
What?
It might be a kid's book by the time I finish. But essentially, right, it's a book that my dad wrote.
What? Explain.
Like 30 years ago. And I don't know, maybe unwisely, have decided to take on the challenge of rewriting it and reworking it for a modern audience.
Wow.
That's fascinating, actually, yeah. Dave.
It is.
I know. Well, what's weird about it is that when my dad was writing it, he was about the age that I am now. Oh. And I remember sort of sitting in the living room as a kid saying, "What's dad doing?" And mum would say, "Oh, he's writing his book." And dad would just be sat at the dining room table with all these notebooks everywhere. It's like, "Oh, wow, he's writing a book. It's going
to
be amazing."
Was he saying, "I've not actually written anything today, but I just need to find the right place to put my coffee and..."
Yeah, pretty much.
And, yeah. Oh, God. Did you know, around that time, Dave, in your house, in your childhood house, did you notice a lot of pictures and things going up on the wall?
Bits of
the bathroom getting fixed.
Doorways moving. That sort of thing. But yeah, so he wrote this book, and then I think my mum typed it up because she had a secretarial, you know, qualification from when she was a teenager. So she typed it up, and I remember reading it in the sixth form and thinking, this is actually quite good. And then 30 years later, my dad sent it to me again, and I read it again. I was like, do you know what? There's something in this. I'm going to try and rewrite it. But it's taken me a couple of years to get to this point. I'm not rushing things. But,
this would be a fantastic like family tradition, wouldn't it? To just keep passing down this book, to update it and bring it on.
Just keep passing it along.
In many ways, it's the ultimate realisation of what this podcast is all about. It's not just I'm not finishing
it's
anything,
putting
but
stuff
several
off
generations
years,
of my family have failed to finish the
it's
same
sort of an heirloom.
Thing. Yeah.
How much of it, Betty, are you actually having to adjust or change? Are you
quite a lot
starting
of it.
From scratch and sort of taking the basic idea, or are you using some of the actual language?
I'm using some of the actual language, but a lot of it is being I'm adding scenes and taking some scenes out and rearranging stuff because the action sort of, it happens over a long... So some of it takes place in the First World War and some of it takes place in 1989 and I'm sort of cutting back between the two. But yeah, it's...
And are you allowed to give us like an elevator pitch of the story?
Well, it's sort of part war story, part coming of age, and part supernatural thriller.
Ooh.
Wow.
Spread over
Sounds
the decades.
Excellent.
Yeah. The basic premise is that on the 11th of the 11th, on Remembrance Day, the sort of spirits of those who died in the war... can sort of come back and interact with real people.
Ooh, like
it's a good premise, that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lovely premise.
That's what I've been working on, but it's quite hard. It's hard because, like, I want to keep as much as possible of what Dad did, but then there's some bits where it's really, you know, it make more sense if I just chop it out. And it feels weird to just... Yes, in many ways, yes. But it just feels weird to like take stuff that Dad worked on for so many years and just go, right, we'll just get rid of that bit. Like, even if it's the best decision for the story.
The question I've got then, Dave, is that harder than editing your own stuff?
Yes, I think it is.
Because it's bloody hard taking your own stuff out, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it is harder because, like, every time I cut something out, there's a bit of me that sees my dad reading that section of the book and going, oh, I like that bit. What's the point of doing it, though, if I'm not going to try and make it the best it would be?
Does your family know that you're doing this?
Yes, yeah. I told my dad what I'm doing. He said, you know, just do whatever with it because he, you know.
Just do whatever with it. Get your mum to type it up when you're done.
Exactly, yeah. We got a typewriter.
So when you normally go back and edit something, when you've written it, you have bits that you never put in the first place that are still in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
When you're editing someone else's stuff and you're taking out a big chunk, it's all new stuff that goes in. You've got none of the, I was going to have him do that. You've got none of that to fall back on. It's like all, must be quite hard work.
It is hard work because you also don't have, like, there's a lot of guesswork about, like, obviously I can see what my dad wrote, but I can't sort of see what he was thinking at the time, what the actual intention was at that point.
But then I guess that's why you end up adding something to it.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Hope that's the idea. But I have added quite a lot to try and... See, the problem was it started off in 1989 and then it jumped back to 1914 and it stayed there for about 90 pages. And then it came back to 1989. And what I wanted to do was to try to sort of cut back, so alternate chapters. So one chapter in 89 and then go back to the war and then come back to now. So it just meant taking each little bit and rearranging it to try and create that. Mm. And then that meant adding new bits to make it all make sense and keep the sort of narrative flow. And then to sort of taking other bits out that didn't necessarily need to be in there. But I think I'm like over halfway with it now. I'm looking forward to getting it finished because... I want to write. There's some other stuff that I want to write as well, but I keep saying, no, I've got to get this done first, get this done and out the way, and then, whew, you know, on we go.
You've not come across any awkward erotic sex scenes that your dad's written then?
No, not yet. Not unless there was like a subtext. I don't think he wrote the word finger anywhere in the... Maybe someone got their finger blown off by a Mills bomb or something. That's not quite the same, is it? But... there's a bit of swearing though. I wasn't quite expecting that. I hadn't remembered. So because my dad, I never really heard my dad swear very much, and then suddenly it's all there written down. And you go, oh,
dad.
That's what it must have been like on the building site.
And what about writing style? Are you trying to fit in? Is there a gap between your style or anything like in terms of voice?
A little bit, yeah. What I'm trying to do, because my dad is sort of quite the military historian, so the bits that are set back in the First World War, I'm trying to keep that as much as he wrote them as possible, whereas I'm sort of focusing more on the 1989 bits, trying to sort of, you know, link it all together. I think there's maybe a slightly different voice between the two, but hopefully it should all come together, I think. When it all joins up.
Well, that's jolly interesting, Dave.
Yeah.
That is genuinely interesting and has no place whatsoever on this podcast.
I know. Well, Dave, but I haven't finished it. So, we'll come back in a year's time and see how it's going. But
very good.
It's also a very nice story, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to sell something, you always need a story that encapsulates it. And that's a nice little story.
Exactly.
When you're on
that's
Jonathan
another
Ross.
Reason... Yeah, exactly. I have thought that. That's like another reason to try and get it finished because there's only a limited time where I can use the story. I'm the same age as my dad was when he originally wrote it. Like if I'm still writing this when I'm 60, I can't use that anymore. So, yeah. So, you know, so I'm trying to get it finished because I think that is quite a sort of nice angle, isn't it? To sort of try and push something.
Yeah.
You know, written. It's a story that spans generations and it's written over generations as well.
Wow.
To... members of the same family make a complete pig's ear of writing a book 30 years apart.
I've actually got good news. I have been writing, and I think this podcast has actually helped me.
Good.
That's nice, isn't it?
That's the whole point, isn't it?
And it has actually helped. I had to negotiate with my wife. It was quite successful. Little chat. As you know, Tom, you've seen me negotiating before. You've seen my skills.
Yeah, it was never one of your stronger suits, was it?
No, I prefer to roll over.
Yeah,
people walk all over me. But I negotiated a couple of hours a day. I've got 2 hours of guaranteed writing time every day, which is what we were talking about.
Wow.
Isn't it? You need time every
day.
Plus other time if I can find it during the day. But
yeah,
but that's guaranteed.
Have you used any of it yet, or have you just got the time there?
It's there. No, I have actually been using it. Yeah, I've been writing. I'm trying to finish a short story at the moment. I'm in one of those gnarly little bits at the moment.
Oh, you keep falling asleep, do you?
Yeah, I genuinely have already fallen asleep a couple of times. But I'm getting there. I think I've unknotted a particularly tricky bit.
Those are the easiest bits to walk away from and never go back to that piece of writing.
Yeah.
Can't
do it.
It doesn't work.
If this can't be resolved.
Painted yourself into a corner, and it's just easier to go,
yeah,
fine, I'll start a new story then.
I've got a great idea for another story.
Yeah, sod you lot.
It's very easy to do that, to just think, this you can't negotiate past this. Well, John couldn't. John couldn't negotiate past this.
Couldn't negotiate himself out of a wet paper bag. John couldn't.
But yeah, no, you keep going.
Yeah, I will.
Keep struggling through.
Yeah, it was one of those stages where I told Katie that I was going down to write. What I was actually doing was just sort of staring into space. So I probably wrote a paragraph in the 2 hours. Yeah. But having written that paragraph, I've actually found the way of getting beyond it and moving on. So that's the...
There it is, yes.
And they're lovely moments, though.
Brilliant.
You feel quite elated.
Yes, yeah. It is a nice feeling when you suddenly just go... I had one the other night when the sort of stereotypical woke up in the middle of the night and went, that's the solution. Yeah. I had to sort of get up and write it down, which is tricky because I'm blind as a bat and I couldn't find my glasses and I couldn't find a pencil. And I was thinking, I'm going to forget this if I don't do it quickly. Yeah, could have switched the light.
And did it make sense in the cold light of day?
It did. It did. It made
sometimes
perfect sense.
Those midnight ramblings.
Yeah, those great ideas.
Yeah.
They only connect in the half awake space, don't they?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I've not written anything this week. The podcast has helped me feel more guilty about not writing. But I guess that's the first step, isn't it?
That's a start. Yeah, that's a start.
So, yeah, I think I need to set some time aside. I'll just write some more poems about dinosaurs building factories. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine.
I was wondering if it wouldn't be a good idea to talk a little bit about how we sort of met and how we worked as copywriters. Because I remember when I started as a copywriter in radio, the idea was that this is brilliant, I've got a job as a writer, now I can use my spare time to actually be a proper writer. But that never sort of worked out. Was it the same for you guys? Did you want to get a job as a writer, or did you sort of fall into it?
Do you know, I always thought I was going to get a job as a writer. And for years, I thought I wanted to be a journalist. Because that's the only job I knew where writing existed.
Yeah. Getting paid to write stuff.
Yeah, and then kind of fell into the advertising thing. But it certainly suited my short attention span and love of cheap, quick jokes.
Right, writing nothing longer than 30 seconds.
Yeah. Squeezing it down, but making it work.
It does make you quite good at brevity, doesn't it? It makes you good at editing.
Yes, it does. I think it's good. It's a good schooling for that.
I always used to tell myself words. That. Anyway, you know, this is good training when I eventually get round to writing the proper stuff.
So you had that dream back then, Birdie?
I did. I always wanted to be a writer. That was the only thing I ever wanted to do. From the moment I realised I wasn't going to be an international footballer.
So quite early on then?
Yeah, when the ingrowing toenail kicked in and I thought, I'm never going to play for England now. I thought the only thing I ever wanted to do was be a writer. But like you say, it's difficult. You can't really go, you can't apply for a job as a writer. You can't write to the BBC and say, I would like a job as a writer, please. And they go, here you go. Here's a commission for a 6-part sitcom. It doesn't really work like
that's right.
It?
You're in a catch-22 from the start, aren't you? You have to write in order to become a writer.
Yes.
But you have to have the time in order to be able to write.
Well, that was the thing. So when this sort of job came up, copywriting job, And I genuinely thought, right, I'll do this for 6 months, and then I'll be discovered.
Get sacked.
Yeah, I'll get sacked, and I'll have to do something. I'll go on the bins. But I thought, no, I'll do this for 6 months, and then finally my talent will shine through, and I'll get a proper writing job. In the meantime, I can write at night now that I'm earning some money. But yeah, the sort of the job of writing, and you do think, right, I'm training, I'm working as a writer, I'm developing my toolkit and all this sort of bollocks. But the reality is, when you've been working as a writer all day, the last thing I wanted to do was go home and start trying to write something else.
Yeah, that's what the guy that came around and did the plastering said. He's a plasterer in Tyler, and he said
the last thing he wants to do at night.
It was just at the start of all the lockdowns and stuff, and he was like, "Oh God, I'm gonna have to do all the stuff at home now," because he's not done it. Because
his house is a shit tip, basically.
Just bare walls. Yeah. Throughout.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's written 3 novels, so you know it's swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so.
No, it's true though. I think it comes back to this thing where it, writing is not 100% fun, is it? It's not a fun thing to do.
No,
it's enjoyable, but in the same way that going for a hard run can be enjoyable, or walking up a steep hill.
The actual
is enjoyable.
Act isn't that much fun. Yeah. It's the completing.
Yeah. Having done it is much more fun than actually doing it. But what about you? So when you started writing ads, lads, was that part of the plan? Was it a plan to be a paid writer? Or
wasn't for me. I was just pleased to be getting paid for anything at that stage, I think. Yeah, no, I don't think I thought about it. What about you, Tom? Were you did you harbour it?
Really. No, I think it's always I'd always harboured a little not as full time as Dave, but that old adage that, you know, everyone's got a book in them,
that it might just happen organically at some point. It just sort of
you
fall
just
out.
Just it would just kind of fall
if
out.
You're holding a pen long enough, eventually you'll write some words down.
I was seeing, you know, it was always a bit more like, you know, the women that end up getting pregnant but don't realise it, then go to the toilet.
I've got a book,
and the baby comes out,
falling out. He's gonna drown.
So similar. I thought it was gonna be similar to that. I'd just be writing and just kind of be messing, and then go, "Oh my God, look, I've actually written a novel here." But it didn't work like that.
It doesn't really, does it?
Betty, did you know what you wanted to write? Did you want to write sitcoms? Or novel,
yeah, no, it was always comedy. I always wanted to write sitcoms or comedy sketches, that sort of thing.
Dave, you should try writing some comedy then.
Maybe I should, shouldn't I?
Rather than that stuff.
All this serious, hard baked.
Oh my God, why don't you write something funny?
Well, it just never occurs to me. But yeah, that was always the plan. Because I was working at Galaxy for a while, and I think it was, I don't know if it was before you started there, John, but I got a sketch that I wrote was made by the BBC as part of a sketch writer.
This is the Scottish one.
No, this was before all that.
Oh, this
before
is a that, one.
There was like a
okay, this is
2001, I think it was. There was a competition, submit sketches, and they picked. I was like shortlisted to the last 12, and then they made. This is when the BBC had money to do this. They just made all 12 of the shortlisted sketches, and then they put them up online. But this was in the days when of like dial up, so nobody could actually watch them. Because you couldn't watch a video online. And then it was like open to a vote to see which one won. And again, going back to the problem of me not being very popular or knowing anybody, I didn't get any votes. But I got to see something that I'd written be made. That's cool. But that was 2001. And my biggest problem was never capitalising on anything that happened. Like never going, right, I've done that. I should do something off the back of it.
I think that's important, isn't it? A bit of
get
momentum.
Get the momentum going,
thing.
Yeah, rather than going, right, I've done that, I'll just sit down for 3 or 4 years and then do something else.
Do you have a copy of that?
No, I've been looking for it because, like I said, I can't even remember how I saw it.
Couldn't actually download it with your dial-up.
Or maybe I'd sort of downloaded it at work and then couldn't get it, but I saw it once. It wasn't exactly as I'd written it, but I thought it was quite good. So the basic premise was about, you know those movies where there's like a cop, like Dirty Harry or whatever, is trying to get information, and a guy goes, I don't know, my memory ain't so good as it used to be, and then he gives him like a tenner, and he goes, yeah, I know the guy. This was that, but in a hospital, and it was someone asking how their family member was, And the doctor was going, my memory ain't so good as it used to be. And then they give him 10 quid. Yeah, we just operated on him. He's like, is he going to survive? Well, I couldn't really say. And then they give him another 10. Yeah, he'll be fine. But yeah, so I saw that. That was quite, it was quite good. And then I never did anything else.
But then when you did start writing sketches and you wrote the one for the Scottish
play.
If we should call it the Scottish sketch. Yeah. We don't mention the Scottish sketch.
No, not by name.
But presumably you wrote more than
one. Oh, yeah.
Like you were writing
sketches. Writing stuff, yeah, but just...
And that just happened to be a good one.
I put them where they still are now, sat in on a floppy disk somewhere underneath my computer. But yeah, I've written loads of sketches over the years. Just very few of them have ever seen the light of day.
And Tommy, can I ask you a question? If you were to write if you were to give yourself the time and actually bother to sit down and write something.
This is already making me feel a bit uncomfortable, yes.
I know you wrote your little sort of parody book.
But what a patronising way of describing it.
Oh, no.
You wrote your little short, parody book.
Silly little parody book.
Yes, I did, yes. Sorry.
I was like...
No, but it is little, isn't it? It's short.
I want to be a writer, Dad. Oh, well, you've written your little parody book.
You've written your silly little parody book now, haven't you?
Your toilet book.
Now it's time to get married and get a proper job.
I'm not dissing... I like that book a lot, so I'm not dissing the book.
Yeah.
What would you want to move on to?
Well, I've got the first 2.5 chapters of a novel knocking around.
From how long?
Well, ago? I was going to say before when we talked about when we were working in radio and whether we wanted to be like proper writers and stuff. And I remember sort of saying, I've had this idea for writing a book. So that I would guesstimate that was probably 2004. So yeah, no, I mean, that's an idea I've had that it still seems like a good idea.
Well.
So I need to get
on with it then.
Just
get on with
writing
it.
Now.
Yeah. Write a third chapter.
Yeah. Big step that though, isn't it?
You two wrote, I seem to remember reading an episode of something that you two wrote a long time ago.
That was very good, but John just gave up on it.
Wasn't it about, was it a door-to-door salesman or something?
No,
like
it was...
It was a sitcom.
Yeah, about like a pastiche of changing rooms.
Ah, yeah, that's it.
But you also got to see behind the scenes.
Parody of.
It was just a pathetic little bastard of a pastiche, Dave. Disgusting little script.
Well, I seem to remember it being quite good.
It was very funny in places.
Yeah.
But it just petered out, didn't it? We just never picked it up. I mean, that was a long time ago as well. There's a bit of a theme emerging here, isn't it?
Do you think the characters were a bit too closely based on the actual presenters of Changing Rooms?
Lawrence
might
Llewellyn
have been
Bevin.
A legal problem further
and,
down the line.
Carol Frowney. Why would that be even?
Handy Mandy.
It was actually a man called Andy. No, they weren't that close.
No, they weren't.
There's not much width, is there, in terms of the scope of presenters on those programmes of Ground Force and Changing Rooms and whose room is it anyway or whatever.
Was it a mockumentary thing?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Because that was all in vogue.
Yeah, it was. I just remember there were some really good jokes in there. I'm not sure about the rest of it. But there were some really, really sharp, humorous jokes in there.
Yeah.
That probably wouldn't stand the test of time if we actually went back and read them now.
But
I remember them being really good.
You're probably right.
Some things are better as memories.
But I'm sure all that stuff is just, it's good practice, isn't it? It lays the groundwork.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all experience.
It's good to see where you've gone wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's the reason for this podcast existing. The focus has to be to actually commit to actually writing something.
Not just... Yeah. Silly
not
little
just silly
books,
little things, actual things.
Important
not
books.
Not silly little pointless things, but really world-changing novels.
Because we do know some people from the copywriting world who have actually finished things and transitioned to being proper writers.
Yeah, they've done real stuff.
Yeah.
Real things.
Successful
books.
People.
Books. I mean, I've not seen any of them on Jonathan Ross, so I'm not sure whether you can truly say they've... done anything, but
yeah.
Do you think they'd come on the show?
Well, I don't
know. I think they'd be fools not to, wouldn't they? Just for their own PR and
for the publicity.
Yeah, just the exposure that they get will be immense.
Get three more readers, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Oh, would we actually have to read the stuff they've done?
Well, we could promise we would read it, wouldn't we? But we should. We could ask. They could only say no, and we're very used to being told no. So,
yeah. It'd be interesting though, wouldn't it? See what they're, how they did it, how much time they gave to it, whether it was like a massive commitment or it was just something that happened, like one of those women that gets pregnant and doesn't realise it.
Yeah.
Where they got the break from, whether it was luck, whether they kind of had to, how many rejections they got, all that
luck.
Kind of stuff.
It's probably luck, I think.
Oh, it will be, won't it?
I'm just putting it out there. It's mostly luck.
Yeah.
But they could come on and they could tell us all the things that they do differently to us in order to be successful. And we can then just dismiss that out of hand and carry on much as if before.
Because what if they say something like, yeah, I went round all the publishers in London and literally sat on their doorstep and I talked to them all and, you know, got meetings with them. And it took 3 years, but, you know, eventually I made friends with them and took them out for lunch.
Friends?
I guess we just have to accept we are failing writers and... I'd be happy that we chose the right name for the podcast. So there. Well, thank you for listening to the Failing Writers podcast. Well done if you made it to the end without fast-forwarding. You probably did fast-forward through a few bits. It's fine. Join us next time for more writing shenanigans.
I found a bogey up my nose. Best place for it, I suppose.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?